Well, then how did you handle it when you kind of opened up this new field in terms of looking at E1A differently as a part of a process of tumor suppression rather than viral transformation? Yeah, you're opening up, you're on the edge of this cutting new field, and suddenly these huge labs are jumping in, and it's clear that, you know, if you go ahead with all of this, it's going to be survival of the fittest.
That's right. Now, what is your question?
Yeah, so, how did you react in terms of the kind of decisions you were making at the bench, as well as your kind of the personal decisions of, you know, how much longer to continue with the postdoc and where and how to look for jobs,
oh, okay,
knowing that, you know, you're going to have to compete now with, the competition is not, even though you're opening up basically a new field, the competition is just as big as it was with oncogenes.
Right. Well, that the competition did not bother me at all, because I have been competitive for several years, and then so that became my sort of, and you know, that becomes kind of an entertaining thing to compete and do things before anybody does it. And I started looking for a job, it did not got that far. When I started looking for jobs, the tumor suppressor story came out from here, actually, after I moved here, after it.
Your second cell paper.
Right. And so before that, it was simply an idea, and it was between Nevins, me, and few other people who are involved, and they were the only ones who was thinking that this is it. But that at that time, although Nevins was asking me to stay another year or so to continue, it was my fourth year also, and typically, you know, you do not want to extend beyond fourth year, so I was looking for job, and finding job and deciding which one to take is another story. But then the tumor suppressor story developed after I moved and started my lab here, and then I showed that that's indeed the tumor suppressor, RB, that is involved in this regulation, and then what E1A is doing is binding to RB, leading to release of this transcription factor, which was otherwise sequestered by this tumor suppressor. So it is, you know, that is linked to E1A's transformation function. So the thought is E1A transforms cells by binding to this tumor suppressor and takes it away from the system. So as if tumor suppressor is not there, like in many mutation in cancers, which is developed as a result of mutation, the RB protein is not there. So these patients are these people are predisposed to tumor. So viral oncogene is doing the same thing. It's not changing the DNA, but taking the gene product and taking it away from the system. We're talking about competition still. I published a cell paper from my lab here, and I thought if I can publish the cell paper from my lab here, I could compete. It was at that point I recruited many people in the lab. I was very matured in terms of recruiting people, not knowing that one has to look at them. I was immature in a sense that I thought that everybody is like me. And that was not the case. You know, and then I did not recruit, I was unable to recruit people who I would imagine would work like me. You then change the environment. You convert a lab to a very non-competitive lab. Because you can imagine those labs in Harvard, they have postdocs, 20 postdocs. Each one of them is like me. So it took me a while to realize that, 3-4 years. And as a result, I was not able to keep pace with these people. And I had to slowly shift. I didn't shift too much. When I realized that I cannot keep pace with them, what I decided to do is try and think what is something that would be important after 5 years. Can I start doing now? And in fact, something I started doing once I realized that. Those are difficult things to think of, and those are difficult things to do. And it looks like nowadays, at least now, I can see that those things are looking very good, and things that we are working on in the lab right now are very exciting. So the trick was to do something that they are not going to do right now. They will do after 5 years. Can I figure it out? Can I do it now? Then I'm not in a competition, but doing something equally important. In fact, that's something I call my, you know, I would imagine that that's something. If I didn't do that, I would have been totally lost by now in competition or doing totally different things.
So what have you decided on? How did you shift your lab specifically? And how does a scientist go about trying to figure out where the novel areas are going?
Yeah, It is the difficult part of being a scientist, I think. It is the part which decides how far you will progress or how far you're going to go. Is look at things globally, look at things, what is important now, what might be important later, how to start things now which will which people with, so those are think involve a lot of thinking. It involved a lot of global thinking and trying to see the important part of it. That helped me getting away from the competition, feeling bad about not being able to keep up with these people. That helped me actually a lot. And I do things which is important, which is done before everybody, and then I feel good about it now.
And why? We have your papers, we have your most recent papers, so we know what areas you've gone into, but why did you, what we don't know have is why did you choose to go into these areas? What is it about?
In fact, the recent papers you saw are actually areas of research that I think I have finished doing those.
Okay.
And then something which is developed more, and then something I have not given you. The paper just got accepted, and then I'll probably tell you if we talk about it. The two things in my mind right now is, well, it has to do with cancer, and again, cancer patients. These cancer patients are being treated. We need drugs. We need to know what are the important targets for these drugs. So one of the hypotheses that I was testing, whether this E2FRB complex, which is believed to be a repressor, is this an ultimate target of all signaling pathways in cell that shuts down cell growth. If that is true, if these repressor complexes can shut down growth, if we can establish that, then we might be able to design drug that will generate more of this and will shut down cell growth. So that was something that I was testing. And what I was able to do is link this tumor suppressor called P53 to the RB pathway of growth suppression. So basically, my work showed that P53's function is linked to function of RB. People thought about it, but no one demonstrated it. In fact, showed it. One of my paper in MCB shows that is indeed the case. We recently showed that another growth inhibitor, that these inhibitors are called CDK inhibitors, Steve Ellett studies a lot. Some of them he identified. I have a lot of respect for this guy. One of these inhibitors, the CDK inhibitors called P27, There are experiments done in mice where the gene has been disrupted, and when the gene is disrupted, these mice are bigger. They have all kinds of tumors. Many organs are tumors. So in that way, it is a tumor suppressor. And I was trying to show that these function of this tumor suppressor is again linked to this E2FRB complex or not. And we showed that in one of these recent papers that just came out in Molecular Biology of Cell, that this CDK inhibitor carries out its function of keeping cell in a non-dividing mode. See, one of the important basic difference between normal cell and tumor cell. In normal cell, they are resting, and tumor cells, they don't rest, they divide. And that's the basic thing I look at. In fact, many cancer drugs that are used, those are directed to this difference. They inhibit DNA replication. They damage the DNA, inhibit replication so these cells cannot divide. So the regulators we study, P27, KEAP1, P21, CEAP1, these are regulators which are believed to keep cells in a non-dividing mode. What I showed in last 2-3 years is that what these inhibitors do is generate the repressor complexes of E2F. What these repressor complexes do, they shut down the replication enzyme genes. The result is there is no replication enzyme in these cells. So these cells cannot replicate. In our body tissue cells, most of the cells are just sitting there. They are not dividing or replicating because there is no replication enzyme because of this repressor complex. Is when you have mutation in the RB gene or mutations in this pathway, then you do not have enough repressor complex. You express more of the replication enzyme genes. Cells do not have choice but to replicate and maybe divide, undergo division. And so where I see that that is a main part of tumor genesis. So that is something I showed in last 2-3 years, that the function of these inhibitors. What we were also studying is, this is more related to Pew funding. It took me a while to finish or get to a point where I can say I have successfully made progress in Pew funding. I propose to study how these tumor suppressor functions, basically, the RB tumor suppressor. During the funding period, we pursued something which would apparently look like a wrong track. But I'm not very clear whether there was a wrong track. And I had to suffer for that in many ways. However, during the time, I also took another approach. And now what we found is, recently we have now identified a transcriptional partner of this transcription factor E2F. What it is a protein that binds to same site on E2F where RB binds. It is a protein that we think is involved during the stimulation of replication enzyme gene expression. So it's in the pathway of cell division. So it stimulates replication enzyme. So it's like opposite to RB. It binds at the same site as RB and basically displaces RB from E2F. It acts more like E1A.
Okay.
E1A displaces RB from E2F. This one also displaces RB from E2F, but it then stays there to carry out another function to stimulate the transcription. That is, I think, very exciting. The exciting part of this thing is that this protein turns out to be a DNA repair protein, which was a big surprise for me. DNA repair protein. There are now many, many aspects of it. Okay, let me address this one by one. Am I still on track?
Okay.
The one track has to do with the replication and then cell division and tumor genesis. That this protein is acting to displace RB, to carry out a function that is found in tumor cell, that is, or dividing cell. It's expression of the replication enzyme genes. Do we see that this protein is overexpressed in tumor cell compared to normal cell? What is the regulation of this protein? There are some. The other part of this protein is that it binds to damaged DNA. That was a surprise. We didn't understand at that point why a damaged DNA binding protein is a partner of E2F. Now that has a lot of interesting actually explains a lot of interesting phenomena known for a long time. This thing called transcription-coupled repair, that many genes are repaired very efficiently during their transcription process. And no one knows how these genes are repaired in a transcriptionally coupled manner. There's a disease called Cochin syndrome. These children, this is a rare disease, a genetic disease. These patients, they cannot repair the transcriptionally active gene. So they are missing this transcription coupled repair function. They have all kinds of abnormalities. They don't live after their teens. They die in early teens. It turns out that the protein that we identified is structurally very similar to that protein which is involved in Cochin syndrome. So that fits with the notion that these proteins might be involved in transcription-coupled repair. Now, replication genes, remember, are genes that are necessary for DNA replication and cell division, which is an essential part of cell division, that you replicate DNA and divide, make two cells. Now, if the DNA for the replica, if the gene is damaged, you cannot make the replication enzyme. So you cannot get replication. So there must be some efficient repair mechanisms for these replication enzyme genes. Because in cell, just normal metabolism of cell, they generate a lot of DNA damage. And many of these DNA damage could be on the replication enzyme genes. If those damages are there, this cell is not going to replicate no matter what, if there's no repair. So it appears that E2F, what it is doing, is recruiting this repair protein, which has two functions. One is to transcribe the replication gene and ensure, if there's a damage, that it sees the damaged side and then repairs it or allows repairing that side. So basically it's like an ensuring mechanism that the replication genes will be repaired. It has other implication in tumor biology. I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that you must have read this, that breast cancer patients, for example, which is such a huge thing right now in terms of studying, that these patients, they are responsive to drugs, and then a significant part of it, they become do not respond to drug, as if they have acquired drug resistance. Well, it is drug resistance, and there are many ways drug resistance is developed in cell. One way is that these tumor cells repairs the replication genes very efficiently. The drugs are damaging the DNA. But if you have an efficient repair mechanism, then the drug is not going to work, because even if there's a damage, it's going to get repaired. What my thinking is that this protein, this damaged DNA binding protein, might be involved in drug resistance, because there were reports that this protein is upregulated in tumor cells which are resistant to drugs. So my thinking then is that what E2F is doing is recruiting this protein and then because there's an upregulation of this protein in these drug-resistant tumors. So there is no. I have to before it. I have to tell you something because I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. The scenario that we are testing right now is that this damaged DNA binding might be a way that replication gene expression is regulated. Now, if this protein is an essential partner for the replication gene expression, if damaged DNA binds it, then it is not there anymore. So E2F cannot function. So damaged DNA basically sequesters it. That fits nicely with the fact that if you damage DNA, cells do not divide. So that is something we're testing. We think we have good data for it. It's not complete yet, but we're testing these damaged DNA binding activity of this protein might be involved in down-regulating replication gene expression. And that might be responsible for cell shutoff after DNA damage. But if you have an overexpression of these proteins, damaged DNA cannot sequester all of it. So then something is still available for E2F. That will now assemble a repair complex and repair the damaged site. So I think this might be a mechanism, might be involved in drug resistance in tumor cells. And this is something in future coming year or two, this is something I'll be studying, is drug resistance. And then my thinking is that this protein might be playing a very important role. It will fit with everything you see in drug resistance. So I think that is, I did not propose in my Pew proposal to study drug resistance, but we proposed to find something that is a partner of this transcription factor E2F. We found that. But then what we find, it has a lot of interesting look to it. And then one being studying drug resistance, because that is an important problem in right now. If you go to clinics, what you find is that this oncologist there, they're frustrated that these drugs that worked at some point doesn't work anymore. So can we make a bit more progress in understanding drug resistance? And maybe this protein might help us. And because that, and this line of studies has more direct application to cancer patients. And this is something I like very much, and that something I wanted to do for a while. Not just studying what is the basic molecular mechanism of cancer induction, but then use that knowledge and then to get into a real life situation where some of these can be useful. Well, I'll pause and then wait for your next question.
Okay, well, what would you say drives the kinds of questions that you ask at the bench? Is it clinical concerns, or is it basic fundamental principles of the biochemistry? Yes, of transcription?
Yeah, right. So far it has been the fundamental principle of biochemistry transcription. But then I also see that I'm not helping the my research is not directly helping these patients who are actually suffering from this disease. So I am becoming more interested to spend at least a part of my effort now on, and in fact, I have what I have done in last 6 months or so. Started talking to these clinicians, started talking with people who are doing this kind of research, and getting into that area where I might be able to help some patients. The problems more directly. Something I started doing for the last 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm. Well, so how does this, when you talk to your parents and you explain to them what you do, how does your father react now that you perhaps are not a surgeon, but, you know, are talking to clinicians?
Well,
or
this...
do you try?
This... Oh no, my father does not have any problem anymore about my not being a surgeon. And in fact, he enjoys the fact that I do science, and then often sometimes a good thing happened to me. I told him, look, this is what I've gotten, and so I mean he could see that I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and then he likes the fact that I'm doing. At least at some points, you know, successfully. So I don't think he has any problem. And in fact, he enjoys the fact that I'm doing science now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you had mentioned that you suffered by following the wrong track, but you had also had another project that was pushing you in a good track. And I was wondering, what happens when... you pursue what you think is going to be a novel area, a fruitful area, and it turns out that it's not. What is the price to be paid? You know, what did you mean? I guess another way to put it is, what did you mean by when you suffered?
Well, yeah. Just, you know, what I have been always doing is running two projects in the lab. And knowing that one project might suffer,
mm-hmm.
and it did meaning it did in a nasty way. Nasty meaning this project I was studying, and I was trying to push a story which was not acceptable to many of my peers, and I had difficulties publishing those, and I have difficulties getting any funds for those kind of studies. In fact, I found myself very lonely doing that. But I continued to do it for a while till I realized that it's a no-go situation, that it is impossible for me to pursue, because... What?
And why?
Well, is that NIH, you know, they you can read the reviewers' comments, they had nothing serious against it. But they're expressing concern which are not reasonable, as if they cannot accept the observation as something that what I think is real, they are not thinking that might be real, and so this is and I do not know, you know, it is because I did not study any further. I cannot tell you. This is you know, I gotten into studying an RNA binding protein, thinking that might be involved in the regulation by RB. It's not just me, then it turns out two other groups, one in NIH, NCI, David Levens, he made the same observation that I made. But again, I do not know why I could not convince the reviewers to fund that project. They didn't have anything against the science of it, but it looked like they had a lot against the ideas of it. And then, and that made me suffer because I wanted to study that. And then I was told that it was just wasting time in many ways. I do not know that that was true, but I could not do anything about it. I did not have other resources to continue to study that and prove my point. I could not do that. And I thought at that point something else started looking good. And then that I felt very important, and then not to just put all your eggs in one basket. And you know, so all of a sudden something else looking good. And for example, this project I was telling you, that started looking good, and so it became easy for me to shift all my attention to this and basically stop that. I gave many of my reagents to David Levins in NCI, who studies that. And maybe he has money, he doesn't have to write grants, so he can study that.
Is that the position to have? At a place where you don't have to write grants?
I thought of that. It would be nice, but then it has, in long term, it is probably bad. Writing grant has an interest, has a good part of it. That is, it helps you focus. It helps you, you justify the money you spend. How are you going to spend money? And I think writing grants are important, and I think. It is less comfortable, but it has a lot of positive things to it. Often, during writing, an interesting idea develops, which probably take me a long time to develop. It's during the writing, trying to focus things and trying to prove one point, and then something comes up. It is during grant writing I found myself reading more than I usually do. So I think there are a lot of positive side of grant writing. Do I envy those people who doesn't? Yes, I envy those people who doesn't have to write grants. When I am writing grants, like last week, yes. But what you'll see that many of these people who are in NCI, they did good science at some point, but not now. They have a well-funded lab. They don't have to write grants, but I don't think they do. At least many of them. I do not want to be recorded for this, but I'm not sure that they. They are as many of them are doing still good science, but at least I don't see how you continued if you're not pressured in some way.
So why is it that they aren't doing good science?
No, some of them are doing good science, but then some of them are not.
What's the connection between?
I don't know. Maybe life becomes too comfortable for them. Okay. So.
You kind of like this, you know, at Albert Einstein, it was like really kind of a cutthroat, merciless situation, and then you're in a highly competitive field. You kind of like this competition and this...
No, I think it helps you. That it helps you stay on your toes and do things, important things. Because often we have tendency to just pursue what we see in the lab. Because, you know, you can always argue any new thing you see is important because these are things you find in a cell and they're doing important things. Yeah, I mean, that logic is there. And you can just go on studying things that are not going directly relevant to a disease or to problems of health.
Okay. So how do you see this big shakedown in terms of congressional debates over the budget at NIH and this shakedown at NIH that it needs to be revamped, the peer review system? Some of these are separate issues, but they're also together, that, you know, the NIH has to make different decisions now that their budget is being much more closely watched. And, you know, that there is this big debate of whether we should fund basic science or we should fund applied or more clinically motivated science.
I think there should be, like, you know, equal efforts to both, because, you know, clinical efforts and the science that is directly related to human diseases, that's something we need to do. Think about how you justify the spending money, and if we're not trying to solve a human disease, what are we doing? I mean, we develop normally from a fertilized cell. I mean, that's not a problem. Growing up is not a problem. Why do we study that if we're not solving a problem, a disease? So I think that is very important. That, I think, should be a focus. But if we do not study the basic science, the biology of it, we'll be throwing stones in the dark in when it comes to thinking about disease, how to treat and patients. So I think both of them are equally important, and I think there should be equal efforts. Both.
Okay. Well, we're moving into this huge area of funding, and to pursue some questions a little bit more specifically, I know that at the beginning of your Pew grant, you received a fairly large-sized NIH grant, but really don't have a record of what has happened since. You also got the pretty prestigious postdoctoral fellowship. How has your funding record been in terms of getting both federally funded right. grants and private sources right. of grants?
Right. See, I think the NIH grant that I had was on this project, and then that led me to this RNA binding protein, which NIH reviewers did not like. However, what I saw. That's the sad part of the story. However, what I was able to do was get money from American Cancer Society. I have two grants from American Cancer Society. I did not submit an NIH grant for a while because I realized that they're not going to. Also, I was trying to develop new things. with the money I had from ACS. There are two grants. They gave me like $200,000 a year. That was more than from what I was getting from one NIH grant. So there was money was not a problem. So what I decided to do is develop new things and then submit a good grant. So now I feel that I have developed something, and then I'm hoping that I have submitted, in fact, two grants to NIH. One last week, and then the one I submitted in June, which I'm hoping that these are going to do very well. So, yeah, funding-wise, you know, I had funding all the time. I didn't have NIH funding for last 3 years or so. But I was funded by the American Cancer Society.
Okay. Let me pop in a new tape.